Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, brought to you by the NFL Alumni Association. Charles, good morning. How are you?
Hey, somebody wasn't out until all hours of the morning. Sorry about yesterday. That was awful. I haven't slept through an exam in a really long time. That was that feeling yesterday where I'm like, man, it's really light out now.
I'm impressed with you. I really am. Just continuing to get after it. I like it. We appreciate you taking time to be with us today. So, Charles, obviously a lot going on with the Super Bowl coming up and a lot of storylines in the NFL. Let's start on the Tom Brady front. Number one, your reaction to his decision. What all do you think went into Brady's decision? And one thing that we've been asked about on our show a lot this week is, do you actually believe that Tom Brady is officially retired this time?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's got to ask themselves that. This felt, for lack of a scientific answer here, it definitely felt a little more real, you know, just the emotion, him kind of getting to the bottom of it right away. I was like, all right, let's wait and see if we get the, you know, never say never moment in the next week. But it also tracked with sort of what seemed to be going on when you talk to people around Brady. This idea that there was, you know, all this swath of options, and as time went on, it wasn't a swath of options, and a lot of that had to do with Brady. You know, you start to hear, hey, regionally, he doesn't want to get away from Miami. He doesn't want to go and play in Las Vegas and be that far from, you know, where his kids live. And, you know, this is starting to look like a situation where he's recognized, I'm not going to get a shot to play, you know, for the Miami Dolphins, which is really ultimately what he wanted, but it was clear that they wanted to stick with Tua. Pretty soon it started to look like, hey, this is Tampa Bay Buccaneers or retire, in terms of what Tom wanted and what realistically was on the table for him at the time. Now, you know, I talked about it after the Brock Purdy injury. I felt like, look, if Purdy's injury came in and it was something that wiped out the 2023 season, that is the franchise where I was like, if they pick up the phone, you know, if Purdy's out, and they're sitting there and staring at Trey Lance, and I don't think they have a ton of confidence in Trey Lance right now. I think Tom would take that call. And I hate to say it, but, like, even now, you know, I think that if we get, you know, into the offseason 3 months from now and they're looking at Purdy and for some reason, you know, he has this surgery and things either aren't going well or this is looking like something that pushes into the 2023 season, I don't know that they'll pick up the phone, but I still believe that if they picked up the phone, even if Tom Brady was initially reticent to think about going to the San Francisco 49ers, people close to him would be like, Tom, like, we know what you said. We know you might think it would look bad, but this is one that anybody in their right mind would say, yeah, pick up the phone for that one, because that's too perfect a situation, you know, for a 1 year to finish it off. And when we're all past this, say he doesn't come back for 2023, and I don't think he will. I think that's an extremely low percentage chance. Someday, I think he's going to talk about this realistically and probably say, you know what, I felt like that last season. I didn't really get the run that I thought could be put together because of things that were going on in my personal life. Now we know he played 15 pounds, you know, lighter than normal. I mean, the guy's playing like 210 this season. It's wild. Because of the FTX stuff, all the financial stuff that was going on, and then the injuries that happened on the field and the coaching staff things. I think he probably just is going to end up feeling like he got robbed out of that last season. Nobody's going to cry for Tom Brady, but it is kind of a reality. It was so unusual, the multitude of different things that happened, and I would be surprised if he didn't have some regret the way it ended.
I mean, if he comes back, it's a freaking SNL skit, and you know, I mean, it's like, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, the, you know, crying on the beach stuff, he's going to get the sharp end of some spears on that one for sure.
So how do you view, and I know that there's a lot to this, but how do you view, well, first of all, just the Niners in particular, because that is, I mean, right. In fact, the day that he, announced it, we were talking about that on the show about, yeah, man, that might be real nice for them given the Purdy situation. But what's the domino effect of Brady retiring on the quarterback situation in the NFL?
Well, it's less dramatic than I initially thought, because as we got toward the end of it, it was so clear that there wasn't going to be this situation where realistically there are 5-6 teams in play. It was just by the time he made the decision, I think most franchises knew, you know, that guy is, it's almost a 2-team scenario now because of what he would want. And that would have been, you got the Buccaneers on the table, and then maybe if the 49ers, you know, make that call. So the domino had already kind of fallen by the time he made the decision. Now, that said, it does affect Tampa, and it has an opening there now. Of course, I think, you know, Kyle Trask is the only quarterback right now on the roster. And, you know, here at the Senior Bowl, everybody's almost automatically penciling in Derek Carr there. You know, Carr decision's got to be made. I think it's like February 15th. He's got the $40 million that becomes guaranteed. So, and he has a no trade clause. I mean, everything seems to be pointing to him becoming a free agent, them just having to release him. But, you know, it inserts Tampa Bay as another team now that has to make a decision about, do we go and, you know, try to vie for a veteran quarterback and hold this together one more year, or do we just make the decision that we got to take Tom's salary cap hit now that he's gone? I think it's like $35 million. Or do we, you know, try to re-sign some of these older defensive veterans that we have in free agency, maybe try to hang on to some guys that would be salary cap casualties, or do we just blow it up? So I tend to think that, you know, it's a blow it up situation there. I don't think, or maybe they go, you know, they split the baby and they re-sign some of these defensive guys. But, you know, in the first round, Anthony Richardson now at the 19th overall pick, there's a lot of argument about where the Florida quarterback's going to end up going in the first round. But I think that puts them in play potentially for him, depending on what his availability is in the draft. And the 49ers, that being the other team that, you know, realistically would have been in play for Brady, I think if the Purdy injury is not something that bleeds into the 2023 season, and let's just take it off the table entirely, it was Brock Purdy's job, that quarterback job, starting next season. Like, they would have said, you know, if they keep Trey Lance, I think they would have said it's an open quarterback competition, but it would have been Brock Purdy's job when camp kicked off, you know, quietly, and he would have had to have lost it to Trey Lance. Now with the elbow injury, I don't know. I mean, it all depends on what the timeline looks like. It gives Trey Lance an opportunity if they decide not to deal him this offseason, or really don't have the option to deal him in this offseason, which I probably wouldn't now that Purdy has this injury and the fact that you're not going to get much for him. It gives Trey Lance an opportunity to try and get himself back upright in that franchise.
Charles Robinson with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So Charles, the Sean Payton saga coming to an end this week, and he lands on the Denver Broncos. How did, from the Denver perspective, from Harbaugh to D'Amico Ryans to everything in between, right, landing on Sean Payton, how did we get to this point?
Yeah, to Shefty and Ian Rappaport having like warring tweets over.
Yes.
This was a fun one. It really was. It was, I will tell you that I think the CEO, Greg Penner, there, obviously one of the owners of the Broncos, I think he was really enamored with Jim Harbaugh when this process started. I think that he liked that Harbaugh was just sort of a no frills football guy. He felt like this isn't somebody where we're going to have to deal with anything really other than what he wants to do football wise. He just really was in on Harbaugh. That's what I was told. And this idea that they went after Harbaugh seriously, that was real. Like, they really wanted at least Greg Penner really wanted Harbaugh to be their next head coach. It didn't mean that they didn't want Sean Payton, I just think that this idea that, well, Sean Payton was the one that they wanted all along, he was the sole one, that's just not true. It's just not. And the way that it played out also is indicative of the realities that Sean Payton kind of put himself in. So I think what happened was the Broncos went after Harbaugh. Harbaugh said no. And then they turned their focus to Sean Payton. The complications with Sean Payton were, wanted a ton of money when the process started. He thought there were going to be a lot of offers on the table, wanted a lot of control, and, I mean, you know, effectively total control of the organization. And he was sort of going to be the, you know, head coach, CEO type that runs everything. And I don't think Greg Penner bought into it right away. And so they continued the process after their first round of interviews with him. And D'Amico Ryans, everything I've heard was that was a real pursuit by the Denver Broncos to go after D'Amico Ryans. He wanted to be in Houston, and it was a no from him. And that when they went back to Jim Harbaugh the second time, even though everyone said, well, he's just completing the process, and there were a lot of reporters that it wasn't anything but Greg Penner completing the process and making future connections. That's not what I heard. I heard that it was a, are you sure? Are you sure? Let me ask one more time and be certain that you don't want this job, and that Jim Harbaugh once again said, no, I don't want this job. Nothing's changed. And ultimately, when they went back to Sean Payton the second time, that, you know, Payton saw the writing on the wall. Like, hey, there's no other offers from teams. I've gone around. I've done the interviews. I'm not sitting here with multiple contracts sitting on the table. People saying, hey, the money, the control, it's all yours. He didn't have that. And so I think what Sean Payton ended up seeing was a market that didn't quite pan out the way that he thought when he entered into the process. And the weird thing that happened down the stretch was, you know, you had that report where it was like, well, maybe Sean Payton's not going to end up with Denver because of sort of some point of friction between him and someone in ownership or whatever. Okay, I'm not going to say who leaked that, but I was like, to me, it felt like things started to leak out that were giving Sean Payton excuses in case he didn't get a job in this rotation, where all of a sudden, if he goes back to Fox, it's like, well, you got Colin Cowherd out there going, well, maybe these jobs aren't all the best. You know, maybe these aren't all the perfect situation. Maybe there's an issue with Sean and ownership, or, you know, so there were basically excuses built into it. I don't think that was coming from the Broncos. I'll put it that way. I think there was a, you know, an element of saving a little bit of face there, but ultimately, the second time around, I think for the Broncos, once Sean kind of knew how the process was going for him, that changed a little bit of the attitude and the temperature of things between the two sides. And, you know, right now they're hammering out the contract and they're filling out the staff. And that's basically what's in process for the Denver Broncos. But I would just tell everybody, don't believe this idea where it was like they set off. It was Sean Payton all along. And, yeah, they went through this dalliance with other people, but that wasn't real. It was always Sean Payton. That's just not factual.
We'll have more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you. We're with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, brought to you by the NFL Alumni Association. We welcome Charles back into the program. Joe Rex Road, you are up with the next question. Joe Rex Road, go ahead.
I have so many, but I have to get into the latest with the Colts. What in the world is going on with this freaking coaching search, man?
With the Colts?
Yes.
I mean, is Jim Irsay sitting there going, yeah, get back to me when we're going to name Jeff Saturday? Everybody believes that Irsay, when it's all done, that it's going to be Jeff Saturday, and that Irsay is going to be the one who, made that call. And they interviewed 6,000 people before they ultimately, you know, came to that conclusion. It's one of those searches where it's weird because you're sitting there and you're going, like, Chris Ballard doesn't want to do this. Like, Chris Ballard, he has no choice, so he's going to go through, you know, all these interviews and ultimately and either Irsay's going to step back and go, fine, you know, let's hire whoever you think the best candidate is, or Irsay's going to go, yeah, I like Jeff. You know, like the press conference we had, I made it pretty clear. I like Jeff. Nothing's changed since then, other than the fact that Jeff went out there and didn't really do anything to secure this job. I mean, I know Dan Orlovsky's tweeting about how he had, like, what, five first quarter leads at the end of the first quarter. It was awesome. I love Dan, by the way. I love Dan, but, like, I'm like, man, get yourself some friends like Dan. We'll talk about the bare minimum that you do as a big upside. But, you know, I
tied both shoes every game.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the shirt was not inside out during game. So it's I'm sitting here, and to me, every bit of information that I have, everyone shrugs, and people I've talked to, and it's like, yeah, it's probably going to be Jeff. You know, there's no indication that Irsay has really backed off that. But they've certainly interviewed everybody under the sun. And I told people when they had that initial press conference with Jeff, it felt like hey, we're going to go ahead and treat this as a real hiring right now, but you know, on the back end, we're going to try and make it look as good as possible. I have no doubt that Chris Ballard, after seeing how the season unfolded, has tried to influence the process, but, I will only say if it's not Jeff, then Jim Irsay stepped away from the decision, but I don't have any indication right now that Jim's taking his hands off the joystick on that one.
Charles, the Titans are still looking for an OC, and, you know, we've talked about the possibility of Tim Kelly, you know, being promoted internally. That could still happen at some point. But there has been reports about Eric Bieniemy and Matt Nagy being of interest to the Titans. Yeah. What do you make of the idea, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday, of Nagy and what that could look like? How would you view that hire if that's the way the Titans ultimately decide to go?
Well, it's gotten really quiet all of a sudden, which is interesting because it really did. It, you know, there's like these three candidates that surface between London, Nagy, and Bieniemy, and then it's just sort of gone quiet. And I didn't know if it was like, well, is it because, you know, Rand Carthen comes in and maybe you just recalibrate a little bit, or you go through, you know, the options one more time and try to figure out what's the best possible scenario for them. I think Nagy is, look, I'll say this for Nagy. He had his moments with the Bears. I think he did his best that he could with Mitchell Trubisky, given what the realities were with the roster. I don't think the Bears are great ownership. For the longest time, Nagy was a candidate inside the Chiefs where it was just like, he was presumed to be the next Doug Peterson. He was going to be the next coach that would put it together somewhere. And then he goes to the Bears and it's like all that kind of stink attaches to him. And it's taken some time to wear off. But I still think there are people around the league who believe it didn't go the way it could have with the Bears, just because there wasn't great management. The general manager at the time, Ryan Pace didn't do the best job he could in terms of like filling the roster. And if you look at some of the roster decisions, yeah, wasn't great. And it was not Matt making all those decisions. So I think he's a quality candidate for the Titans. I don't think, you know, that hire, I wouldn't be wildly upset about it. My favorite story about him, by the way, is he loved Patrick Mahomes. So when the whole draft process started with Patrick Mahomes, completely obsessed with him. And this is from Mahomes. I don't know if you guys have ever seen this. Mahomes at one point goes on the podcast with the Kelsey brothers, and he says, you know, Matt gave me basically the answers to the test in terms of the offensive plays that they ran before I met with Andy, you know, just to make sure I would definitely ace it. And I was like, yeah, that's probably a feather in his cap that Patrick Mahomes comes out and says, the guy in the staff who did everything he could to make sure I got drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs was Matt Nagy. And, you know, I think that's a positive. I like the, you know, the finalists that they have right now. I get it. I think they're quality finalists. And I don't think I'd be upset with any of those individuals becoming the OC, particularly after kind of how things unraveled over the course of last season. Where's the last OC right now? What's he doing right now?
I have no clue.
He's in Todd Downing. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, probably. Get a tight ends coach job maybe somewhere out there, right? I mean,
I think he reported to jail.
Oh, he did do that. Yes, yes,
yeah, yes, yeah. That so I mean, look,
which of course, you know. Yeah,
yeah. So
yeah, turned into a Twitter, misinformation exercise on that the other day too. Yeah, but well, sticking with the Titans, Charles. In general terms here, from what you've been able to gather in conversation with people, would you say the impulse that a lot of people have had as soon as John Robinson was fired is accurate, which is that Mike Vrabel will basically have the level of power and the final say here that you know that some of the other coaches we talk about do?
I think so. I do. And as things have kind of gone on a little bit, I think there's a consensus that I don't know how overt they're ever really going to be about it. And again, you're going to continue to hear over and over from Rand Carson on this idea of collaboration. But I think this is all designed for the power center of the roster to be in Mike's hands in terms of what does Mike want, you know, in terms of the players, how does Mike want the coaching staff look? How does he, you know, the process I think can obviously be affected by Rand. I think it would be, but we talked about this early on that I don't think I've ever seen, coaches don't survive a general manager losing the job and not gain, particularly successful coaches, I want to say, by the way. So Mike's had the track record, okay, there. And by the way, Mike also, not only track record internally and what he's done on the field, but the external respect for Mike being somebody that the Titans ever, for whatever reason, parted company with him, he would be unemployed for a nanosecond, okay? He would have another head coaching job, maybe faster than the 6 days that it took Andy Reid to have another head coaching job when he left Philly. That kind of a situation, it shifts additional power to the head coach. And, you know, look, I think they're being very, you know, diplomatic, as they should. I think it's a good working relationship right now. I think Rand and Mike are still getting to know each other. I think they've been above board about the fact that it's not like two guys who have had this long track record of knowing each other and this wealth of experiences, you know, running into each other in the past. And it's two individuals who are still getting to know each other right now. And but, you know, I think Rand was accurate when he was like, look, you know, I'm trying to do what we need to do for this guy, what he needs. I'm here to help execute that. I would never say it in a way where this is some negative where it's like, oh, well, you know, Rand's just coming in and, you know, Mike's the, like I was called, the coach CEO of the team now. And you know, Rand's just there to sort of be the puppet of whatever the heck Mike wants. It might feel like that a little bit, but I do think that Mike Vrabel's approaching this in a way where what Rand's going to bring to the table, maybe some new things, some new wrinkles, Mike's going to be receptive to that. So, but yeah, it's Mike's team right now, and I would have to see something pretty dramatic that maybe Mike wasn't on board with. That's the only thing that would really shift my thought process on that.
Well, Charles, I want to congratulate all three of us. We made our Super Bowl picks last week. I had Cincinnati and San Francisco. Joe had Cincinnati and Philadelphia, and you had Kansas City and San Francisco. All three of us missed. At least you and Joe were half right, but congratulations to all three of us there.
Hey, I didn't know they were going to have a quarterback in the middle of the first quarter. Okay. I mean, like I, and definitely the second half, like that was, insane to sit there after. You know, I was there for that, and I'm sitting there listening to George Kittle basically say, look, by the time Josh Johnson goes down, we had 15 plays in the playbook. And when he said that, I think he was being pretty – I don't think he was being facetious. I think he was like, we had 15 plays, offensive plays we could run. And by the way, that's not even situational. That means you had 15 plays, and then situationally, you might have 2-3 on any given snap.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just – that's about as horribly as it could have gone for San Francisco. So I protest my inefficient pick in the end.
That's valid. Charles, appreciate you taking time to be with us. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. And you know what? I will be there on Thursday next week. I will be there on Thursday next week. I won't wake up and go, is the light out? Why is my phone have like 14?
We've all been there, Charles.
What's going on?
You know you're going to the most extravagant Super Bowl party, so I'm dubious.
Yeah, we'll see. I shouldn't be writing checks right now that I might not be able to cash in a week. So I'll talk to you guys later.
Sounds good. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest, joins us every Thursday, usually this time Friday, usually on Thursdays from 8 to 8:30. So looking forward to that visit again next week. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. We are live from our 1025 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. Thanks to Charles Robinson for joining us the last couple of segments. Joe, there's a lot to get to, a lot to react to with Charles there. The Sean Payton thing is pretty wild to me. Like, we knew that Sean Payton was going to be interested in being back in the NFL this offseason. The fact that it didn't appear to go the way he thought it was going to go was pretty incredible. And it kind of sounds like, based on what Charles said, like the Broncos job was basically like the last ditch effort that he had to get back into NFL coaching circles this season, which is pretty amazing given what he's accomplished to this point.
Yeah. Of course you do have the giving up assets angle on that. Right. So yeah. And yeah, not too hard to read between the lines with Charles. Well, these people are like, these jobs aren't that great anyway. You know? So, hey, who could, you know, totally understandable. Sean Payton would not want to take a coaching job this offseason. Very interesting. And also interesting with the Harbaugh angle with the Broncos. I mean, it seems serious. It seemed like they were serious about him. I do wonder, you know, at some point, do people really get wary? I mean, I think Harbaugh, and pretty obvious, his people were putting it out there that he was serious about this. Could have just been a, you know, get money ploy. Could have been, but I think it was like, okay, Michigan, you're going to step up and you're going to make it all right after cutting my salary 2 years ago because I just won, you know, the Big Ten 2 years in a row and got to the playoff 2 years in a row, or I will go to the NFL. So. But I do wonder if, like, at some point the Harbaugh stuff really starts to fall on deaf ears around the NFL.
Yep, it was interesting to hear what Charles had to say on the Vrabel part of this, too. Like, I think it's clear that, you know, we talked about it yesterday. Vrabel has more power given everything that's gone down in the past few months with the organization. It was interesting to hear Charles describe Vrabel's role the way that he did in the last segment.
Yeah, I mean, it's he's basically, I wish we had a absolute clear running list of, you know, coaches with final say. But basically, you got Pete Carroll, you got Kyle Shanahan, you got Sean McVay. I think you got Andy Reid. It's obviously Belichick is actually the GM right. For whatever reason. He likes to do all the work too. But it's a list of it's sort of to the point where you get to a certain level of achievement in this league as a head coach, and you can expect at least more say. And in a lot of cases, you can expect to be able to overrule the GM. So it's not uncommon. Now, I guess you could look at Vrabel and you could say, has he done it up? But the bottom line is, this is the product of Amy Adams Strunk deciding someone needed to be fired, and the guy who had say over Vrabel is gone. And so this is the natural progression. If it wasn't this, then if I was Mike Vrabel, I wouldn't feel secure in my job.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's the thing. When you start to make big changes like that in the organization, and now there's the offensive coordinator part of this to figure out, you know, a lot of people think it's going to be Matt Nagy. I mean, we talked about the OC spot a lot yesterday. I am interested that when the Super Bowl is over, so, you know, by the time in a couple weeks from now, when we're talking about either A.J. Brown winning a Super Bowl or Patrick Mahomes winning his second Super Bowl of his career to this point, you know, how quickly do the Titans make a decision after that? Like you said, I mean, I think in a perfect world, it would have been nice to have an OC down at the Senior Bowl so you could look at some prospects and maybe get his input on what some of those players could be like and fit like in your offense. It's not the end of the world that they didn't have one down there. I would expect after the Super Bowl that decision gets made relatively quickly, one way or the other.
Yeah, no question. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be tied to that timing, which of course would speak to him, but you know, could be someone else in there too. And yeah, that if it is Nagy, I mean, I like the idea. I think it's a good idea. I don't think it comes with any guarantees. You could look at his time in Chicago, and you know, really the success they had when he was in Chicago, but pretty much owed itself to a very salty defense.
Yeah,
they did not have a good, efficient offense. They also made a bad choice at quarterback, in my mind. I think that's pretty clear now. Now, do you knock Matt Nagy for not developing Trubisky more? You could. I mean, Trubisky has gone on to Pittsburgh, and it's not like he, you know, took the world by storm there. I mean, I think he's clearly a bad pick. It's the whole, like, I mean, do you give Nagy credit for developing Mahomes? I think in a lot of cases, it's you find out what a player is, and of course there's development and work that goes along the way, but I give most of the credit for Mahomes to Mahomes, and I give most of the discredit to Trubisky, just not being good enough. So I don't know what that all adds up to with Nagy as an OC, but he was certainly thought highly enough that he got that head coaching job, and thought highly enough by Andy Reid, and Tim Hasselbeck has made this point,
yep,
that he brought him back, and that is something to keep in mind.
Well, and it's also, you know, I feel like we've talked about this, most people understand it, but I still see some of it. I saw some of it yesterday on Twitter with some discussion about Matt Nagy. Yeah, he's, you know, things didn't go overly well as head coach in Chicago. That does not mean that as an offensive coordinator he couldn't be good. Now, he may not be. I have no idea. Like, if they decide to hire Matt Nagy, is that going to be, you know, the godsend of offensive coordinators to the Titans in this offense? I have no clue. It's still, to me, more about the personnel that you put along with it. But just because he was not successful or overly successful as a head coach in Chicago, to me, that really doesn't have anything to do with the offensive coordinator spot.
Right. And, of course, the scheme itself, and if he comes in, we'll talk about this ad nauseum, but, again, like the Chiefs, actually, when he was OC, were much more of a run-based team.
Yep.
And they had a fair amount of quarterback run with Alex Smith, but they had Kareem Hunt playing a very high level. And you get Mahomes in there, Tyreek Hill in there, Kelsey in there, and there was a lot more. I mean, it's a West Coast hybrid or, you know, descendant, but it's then you had a lot more air raid concepts, and it just – yeah, obviously, we've seen it. And, of course, a lot of this is without Nagy, but just the creativity and almost, you know, run game as an afterthought just to keep you honest kind of approach. But again, that's personnel base. It's not like that's what he's going to do here.
I just want to know if the ring around the rosy was his idea, Bieniemy's idea, or Andy Reid's idea. That's the first question I'm asking in the interview if I'm Vrabel.
I mean, that smacks of Andy Reid on his third cheeseburger, but yeah, it's a good question.
615-737-1025. We'll take more of your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check it out every morning at 7:45. Joe Rex Road, I turn things over to you.
Thank you. Well, today, I guess in general terms, I'm talking about the state of the sports journalism, but in particular, one company. So here's the thing. I people at Sports Illustrated was really for my, like, growing up as a kid, you know, I wanted to be like the Detroit News and Free Press columnist. And of course, you know, you want to write at Sports Illustrated someday. You got it every Thursday, it'd come in the mailbox, your Sports Illustrated issue. And I would absolutely read every single word front to back immediately. And it's, you know, it was the standard, you know, sports journalism. And obviously, I mean, the reality of a lot of things, is mainly the internet, you know, has changed things dramatically in sports journalism. But one thing that SI did, they had, you know, they've had new ownership, and they decided to kind of go the what we call a click mill route, which is basically it's kind of how, I mean, look, when I was a beat writer, kind of the philosophy for a few years, which was, in fact, this is what I told Michelle's class the other day at Middle Tennessee.
Professor, yeah, you went K, through a period Joe. Of
Professor K, my bad. Yes. But you know, you went through a period there where it was just like, it's all, you're trying to get ad revenue. And so it's just get as many things on that site as you can, make the headlines as enticing as you can, click, 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 you know, and it's gotten better. Again, like, I mean, my old company, Gannett, you know, their subscribers are a priority now. Never should have been given away free on the internet. You know, the Monday morning quarterback, a lot of things. But it's gotten better to where it's like, do quality stuff and then have people want to read your quality stuff. So anyway, with Sports Illustrated, for some reason, in the midst of all this, they went sort of a click mill approach with this side company, Maven. And so for people who aren't familiar, there's a lot of, it's under the Sports Illustrated SI.com umbrella, but it's Maven. It's like this, you know, the subsidiary, and they try to do a lot of different team sites. And when that happened a few years ago, there were some, in a lot of cases, it's like young kids out of college. That's what we've seen covering the Vols there. In a lot of cases, it's kind of been a pretty steady rotation. In some cases, some of the hires just astounding. Just bad. But here in Nashville, they hit the freaking lottery with David Beauclair writing about the Titans, because David Beauclair, longtime newspaper veteran, friend of the show, does a fantastic job, and then he has John Glennon with him. And look, I don't know the entire roster of the Maven family, but if that wasn't the best journalism or slash journalist writing in that company for that, you know, for those particular team sites in any league that you want to pick, then I'd like someone to show me better.
Yep.
And I'm sure there are other very good examples. So find out this week that apparently the Titans site is now going to be written by like some dude who has like three Indiana Hoosier sites and lives in Indiana. I mean, it's an absolute joke. It's a joke. And listen, I'm not going to get into the ins and outs, and I've talked to David and John, but it's really criminal. And for Titans fans who have had really good content from two really good journalists who are there every day covering the team. And I don't know this new person. Maybe he'll move to Nashville. And I know he's still writing about the Indiana Hoosiers, and that's what you see within this company too. You see like these random pairings of, hey, cover the Tampa Bay Bucks and also, you know, Washington Huskies basketball. What? It makes no sense. So I don't know all the ins and outs. I'm just very saddened and really upset by it. And you know, those two guys will be fine. But it's just, it really is for Titans fans who should have a big menu of different people to read about their team. It's a huge, huge loss this week.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question about that. And if you've listened to our show for any length of time, you've heard David Beauclair and John Glennon on the show quite frequently. So first off, that's not going to change as we move forward. We're still gonna have John Glennon. We're still gonna have David Beauclair on the show. We value their thoughts and opinions very much here on the show. But I saw that earlier this week, and I think disappointed is a great word. It makes me sad. It's disappointing. And for Titans fans out there, you know, the more that your coverage is cut into, the worse it is. Like I think, you know, we've talked about this before, Joe, the more voices that you could have covering a team or an organization or a league, whatever case it is, I think the better off the fans of those sports and teams and leagues are going to be. So unfortunately, I mean, this is part of the world we live in now with, you know, cost cutting and combining things. I mean, it's honestly, you know, as you know, Joe, the journalism world has shifted so dramatically over the course of the past 15 to 20 years. So first off, I mean, just knowing David and John both personally, wish them nothing but success as they move forward here and whatever's next. And I know that they'll find something great. But in the meantime, it is a loss for Titans fans and for a media corps here in Nashville covering the Titans that, as you look around the league, you know, it's not as big as some. It's not as small as others. I mean, I think everybody does a pretty darn good job, and I'm interested to see where those two land. But really sad and disappointing news on the Maven/Sports Illustrated front earlier this week too.
And let me say, again, I don't know. I don't know the specifics or ins and outs. I do know this. If you compare the Titans fan base, which typically leads to traffic, right, yep, to a lot of the other fan bases around the NFL, it's smaller, it's younger, it's newer. So they're going to suffer by comparison to pick a whole bunch of franchises. These franchises with generational fandom, it's a totally different situation. So if that's any part of this, tell me why somebody randomly in Indiana is going to generate more traffic not covering the team in person. It really is a joke.
It is, and there's no way around that. And like you said, I mean, there's, you know, when you have teams like, you know, the Cowboys and the Niners and the Packers. I mean, you can go up and down the list of teams that have been around for a long time. The market size, like everything factors into it. But like you said, a really disappointing time. And we know David and John both really well here on the show. I have no doubt that whatever they do next, they'll do really well. But sad in the meantime. So I'm glad that you brought this up today on the Rex Rant. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD. We'll get his thoughts on the Senior Bowl. We'll get his thoughts on the offensive coordinator open position for the Titans. That and a whole bunch more coming up next with Teron Davenport. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.